eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Like a lot of you, I work out pretty much every single day and I get my cardio on, and you need to have workout gear. There is nothing like getting some new workout gear to motivate you. And I found some and I love it. 10,000. These shorts are good for any kind of fitness that I do. 10,000 makes the highest quality, best fitting, and most comfortable training shorts that I've ever worn. And I've been wearing their 7-inch interval short with the liner and their versatile shirt. I love this product. It motivates me to want to get my workout in. A ton of great features too, like silver ion for odor protection, no bounce pockets, breathable and lightweight shell fabric, no bounce foam pocket, an optional liner that is very comfortable and prevents chafing. The versatile shirt is the perfect workout shirt. Lightweight, breathable, durable. And a team of over 200 athletes test their gear to ensure the perfect design, fabric, trims, and fit. Plus over 10,000 five-star reviews, free shipping and free returns, and a lifetime guarantee. 10,000 makes unbelievable product and is offering our listeners 15% off their first purchase. So go to 10,000.cc, enter the code Rome, and receive 15% off your purchase. That is 10,000.cc, enter the code Rome.
There was never really any ill will afterwards. They kind of knew that if something happened and they're doing something inappropriate on the other side, and I was definitely going to address it, whether you're a friend or not. I mean, I had former teammates that were at my house the night before for dinner and delivered the mail, and the next day I grabbed them, so, and then hugged it out after the game and had a beer. So it's just our job.
Hey, what's cracking? Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast. This week, we hit episode 198, and we hit it hard with a guy who hit other people hard for a living, because my guest is former NHL enforcer Sean Thornton. He played 14 years in the NHL, and he developed a rep as one of the toughest, baddest dudes in the entire sport. However, you cannot survive on using your fists alone. He also had skills. He won a couple of cups, one with the Ducks in 07 and one with the Bruins in 2011. And now he's got a brand new book out called Fighting My Way to the Top. And if that were to come as a surprise to you, it probably should not. In fact, in my experience, I find that a number of NHL enforcers are some of the more thoughtful guys that I've ever spoken to in that sport. And Sean is no different. So let me get out of the way and get right to the good stuff. It is episode 198 with former NHLer Sean Thornton, and it's coming at you right now. So Sean, you've got a brand new book out, and it's called Fighting My Way to the Top. Let me start right there. What was it like to sit down and write that book and relive those 20 years that you played professionally, 14 in the NHL?
Painful, because I don't really like talking about myself, so writing about it's even worse. But no, you know what, they brought the idea to my attention a couple years ago. I said no the first few times, but they convinced me that I have a story that's not like most NHL hockey players, and if we can share with some younger kids that perseverance sometimes pays off, then it might be worth it. So, you know, happy I got it on paper, happy I did it. You know, tough sometimes remembering all the storylines and exactly what year it was. And like I said, it's a 20-year career. So, and even before that with junior and growing up, but it was was a great experience working with Dale and getting it onto paper.
All right, so I get what you're saying. I think that, you know, somebody came to me way back, I want to say mid-90s, and I had a deal to write a book, and then I couldn't execute it, I couldn't deliver it, and I never did it for the same reason. Like, I don't know, I just can't get around to it. But you're right, your journey is so different, and it's so unique, and people would benefit from it. Let me ask you this. What was your transition from playing to, quote, real life like for you, and how are you doing right now?
Really good, actually. I was always thinking about what the next step was, and probably because my career lasted way longer than I expected it to or anyone else expected it to. I was, you know, always looking to see what the next step was. I thought I was going to get into media. I thought I was going to do TV, radio, some community stuff back in Boston. I actually had an offer from the RSN in New England. But I always had a passion for the business side of sports and, you know, used to spend a lot of time in the front office as a player after practice and really hanging out with a lot of the corporate partners and different organizations I was in. And when the Panthers came to me, probably my second to last year, and offered me a position in the front office, I debated which way I wanted to go for about a month, and then I jumped at it. So I retired, I don't know, the 81st game of my last season. The team went to Washington. They said the plane leaves in an hour. I said, good luck. I'm staying here. You can find me if you want, wow, but I'm done. And then I started in the front office, I think, 2 weeks after that. So it was a quick transition, not much time off, but I jumped right in, and I really enjoy what I'm doing.
Right, Sean. And if there was any doubt, there was no doubt after you threw your skates away and put them in a trash can. So everybody knew at that point. Let me ask you, like, what did you do to maintain, though, that competitive Jones when you stopped playing? I mean, aside from your work in the front office, did you find something else competitive to throw yourself into? What was the outlet?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu. I was there this morning. I started it as a player in my last 4 or 5 years. I got to know a couple of UFC fighters, became friends with them, and a couple of them were really high black belts in jiu-jitsu, and they introduced me to the sport, and I continued with that after I was finished playing. So I go in and sweat it out for 3, 4, or 5 days a week on the mats. And it's, you know, that's the physical side. And then on the mental side, when you're chasing different partnership deals, revenue generating deals, and you close one, it's fairly exciting. So I'm a competitive guy. I don't really like to lose at much or at anything. So I'm trying to channel that into other facets of my life.
Right. So, Sean, I would imagine jiu-jitsu is really fascinating in the sense that, like, I'm guessing you're talking about the grappling aspects and such, right? I can't imagine, after being an enforcer for 14 years in the NHL and 20 years professionally, that you were much in the mood to get punched in the face again.
Never, ever again. I went to the doc, the hand surgeon, after my career was over. I said, can you fix this? And he said, why don't you stop hitting things? I was like, thanks. You went to school for that? appreciate it.
Great.
I was like, yeah, I'm going to stop hitting things. But yeah, it's all grappling. No more. I gave up boxing. I'll hit the bag every once in a while, but I stopped boxing when I retired too. Just on the mats, rolling around.
I get that. I understand that. You know, we talked about how unlikely your story was. Take me back, Sean. You worked in a steel mill as a teenager. I'm curious. I mean, obviously, that could not have been easy. What was that like? And what kind of dreams and aspirations did you have at that point?
You know, I actually had no idea, to be completely honest. I had hopes. I don't know if aspirations is even the right word. I worked in the steel factory when I was after my last year at junior for a full summer flipping bars. Before that, I actually had a worse job working straight midnights from when I was like 15 till I was 18 in a graphic arts factory, like printing McDonald's flyers and jogging them, putting them in boxes. That wasn't easy. But yeah, steel factory. Listen, my grandfather worked there, my uncles worked there, my dad worked there, my sister worked there, generational steel workers, and I had an opportunity to make decent money. I didn't know what was going to be on the other side. I didn't plan on getting drafted. I thought I'd be going back for another year at junior, maybe going to college after that. And the Maple Leafs drafted me. And, you know, 3 months later, 4 months later, I'm in St. John's, Newfoundland playing in the AHL. So wasn't expecting it, but it all worked out.
All right. So what do you remember about draft day and being selected by the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I wasn't there, for one. I don't even know where the draft was. I was golfing with my buddies in my hometown of Oshawa. And then we went back to my house to grab a case of beer, actually. I had a case of beer in the basement, and the phone rang, and it was Bill Waters, the GM. I didn't believe him, so I told him to F off. And then my agent called back on the house line. Nobody had cells back then, right? So called back on the house line and said, no, that was actually Bill Waters that you just told to go F himself. you just got drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs. I couldn't believe it. I wasn't expecting it
at all.
Obviously, being a Toronto kid too, it was something special. So, you know, they sent me a jersey and took a picture in the backyard, but I wasn't actually at the draft because I didn't think I was getting picked.
Yeah, so you weren't actually there, and you told the GM to fuck off. Sean, right. It's no wonder you never played a game for them, right?
I think he actually appreciated it. Knowing Billy a little bit over the years, like, I think he actually appreciated it. Again, I wasn't rated. I wasn't, I talked with one scout, and he said, maybe I'll be able to try and do something for you. I really, like, the last thing I was expecting was that phone call.
Yeah, I don't know if he did. He probably did. I know I did. I definitely appreciated that. I love hearing that story. Hey, listen up. When you want to find amazing rates, organize your finances, or simply make smarter money decisions, LendingTree is here for you. With the LendingTree app, you can see all your bank accounts at a glance so you can better understand your spending and saving and build a budget that works for you. You can monitor your credit score. You can explore ways to improve your credit. You can get automatic alerts to protect your identity. And LendingTree can help make sure that you are getting your very best deal on loans, insurance, credit cards, and more through their wide network of banks and lenders. Plus, LendingTree gives you personalized tips and insights into help you save money and reach all your financial dreams. So whether you want to pay off a debt, buy a home, build credit, or simply make things a little easier, LendingTree has your back for all your short and long-term goals. And best of all, there are no subscriptions, there are no fees, there is no hassle, just easy, honest, straightforward support to make the most of your money and achieve greater financial health. So download the free LendingTree app right now and get started. Then see why thousands of people turn to LendingTree every day for smarter, easier finances. Terms and conditions may apply. NMLS number 1136. So tell me, who was John Boom Boom Shamoon, other than a dude with a great name?
Yeah, so he was the enforcer for the Peterborough Petes the year before I was drafted by them. I had a mentor, this guy Lionel, that really helped me get into the mind space of what I was going to have to do when I got to junior. And he said, "Listen, you're a good player, but you're not good enough to play, you know, defense at the junior level. So you're probably going to play up front, and you're going to have to learn to bring some intangibles, meaning hard work, leadership, and your fists." So the first shift of the first first scrimmage in Peterborough, me and Johnny Boom Boom Shamoon, agreed, great name, squared off and punched each other in the face for a minute and a bit, and went through camp. I guess they deemed that I might be a little bit better of a hockey player and kept me around. And I'm glad they did, or we wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Yeah, right, Sean. So, like, what's it like, for instance, like, no matter how good of a job we have, and you had an amazing job. I mean, again, 20 years professionally, 14 in the NHL. But no matter how good your job is, Sean, there are going to be parts of your job that you don't like, the parts of the job that are going to suck. Part of your job was fighting. So getting punched in the face sucks. Did you learn to embrace the suck, or is that a part of the job that always just kind of sucked and was part of the job?
I learned to embrace it, not saying it was easy, right? Like, the last thing I wanted to do is go out and fight 6'7" monsters in Minnesota on a Sunday afternoon, but it's a means to an end. It's a great living, like you said. I mean, I wouldn't give any of it back. I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, maybe try and make it to the NHL a little quicker than what I did, but other than that, I wouldn't change a thing. But I embraced it. Like, there's worse jobs in the world, right? I have friends that are police officers that have to go into some really bad places in the middle of the night, not knowing if they're coming out. You know, we have friends that serve. Like, there's way worse jobs in the world than what I was lucky enough to do. So I try not to complain about it. It was a decent job at the end of the day, but one of the tougher ones within the hockey world.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt about that. So, like, how did you approach that aspect of the job? For instance, was it just a matter of dropping gloves and letting the hands go, or were you way more technical and tactical about it than that?
I would say, if you asked anyone else, they'd say way more tactical. I probably progressed into a more tactical and technical fighter as I got older. I found out, you know, after a year or two of going fist for fist, nose to nose, that's not as fun after a couple of years. So maybe there's a way to figure out how to do this where you're not getting hit as much. You might not be hitting as much, but you're not getting a hit as much. So I was a pretty technical fighter by the end of it. Like I said, I boxed since I was young, started jiu-jitsu my last 4 or 5 years of playing. I used to, other tough guys I played with used to wrestle with after every practice and work on different techniques and how to switch and not get hit and do all these things. So I was a pretty technical fighter. As far as getting into the mind space, I had a routine during the day that I stuck to that got me into a pretty good spot where I could play the game, but also be ready that if the fisticuffs were going to happen, I could flip the switch on pretty quickly.
All right, Sean, to that point, you mentioned this in the book. What you're talking about is compartmentalizing the fighting aspect of the game, because the fact of the matter is, yes, they needed somebody to intimidate and enforce and protect some of the others. But by the way, you don't play 14 years in the NHL if you don't have skills and you don't do a lot of other things as well. So how were you able to compartmentalize? What was your process for having that switch and approaching it that day?
Yeah, and it took me a few years to get it, to be completely honest. And one coach, Trent Yanni, told me, like, Thordy, like, you know how to fight. Like, you fought everybody. That's natural to you. You need to focus on playing the game. And it really hit me. I was working on the game off the ice and on the ice in practice, but I was probably focused a little too much on who I was going to have to fight and what I was going to have to do in the middle of those fights going into games. I really learned to, like, just focus on playing. Block out the fact that you might have to do it here and there. But when it happens, like, you get into the zone and you just, flip the switch. And I don't know. I talked to Jerome Iginla about this, and you got inducted last night when he was playing with me. I'm like, what's it like when you go into the offensive zone? Because it's just chaos for me. He's like, no, everything just slows down and it all just makes sense. For me, that was kind of fighting. When the gloves came off and you squared off, like, everything just slowed down and it made sense. And I don't know how to explain it other than, It just did. So I was able to do it, but where I really had to work on was, like you said, to play a long time, I need to work on my stick handling, like skating, thinking the game, forechecking, being a good teammate, like all those are the things that I had to continuously work on.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, do not make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. I'm telling you, Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Good, good stuff. And it goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, wherever. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Not to Old Trapper. Old Trapper, what's your beef? I don't want to talk any kind of like credentials. I want you to understand, I love the sport. And I, as a kid in Los Angeles, we had season tickets to the LA Kings way back in the day. I used to remember going to the Forum Club and watching Rogie Vachon. And even back then, I would say, even to date myself, Sean, in the early 70s, for whatever reason, I had a father who was from Boston, loved sports. We had season tickets to the old WHA LA Sharks. So I grew up watching the game. I love the game. Awesome. I understand the game. For those who do not understand, and I'm not necessarily advocating taking fighting out of the game, but has your view of fighting changed at all over the years? Like, would you argue the sport is still better with it? Or maybe could you argue that it no longer needs it?
I think it's gotten to a way better place. Listen, I use it as my foot in the door, 100% fighting 30 times a year in junior, 30 times a year in the minors. That's what got me noticed and got my foot in the door. And I don't know if anybody will have that opportunity again with where the game's at. And you could debate on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I will say, as a guy that had to do it, I was not a fan of, there's somebody on the other side that had 300 minutes the year before, is whatever, 6'4", 230 pounds. And it's my job for no reason to go out and just square off with him in the first shift, other than to, prove who was a bigger or better man. I never understood and never appreciated it, but you did it, right? Like, that's where the game was at and you had to do it. Some guys just wanted to get it out of the way early, and if you did it early, they wouldn't take liberties on your teammates. And there's reasons to it, but I was never a fan of the so-called, in quotation, stage fighting. But the game is a 200 by 85 game. There's no out of bounds. They're moving fast. It's a violent sport. It's a beautiful sport, but it's also a violent sport. Body contact, those guys are quick. So I always think there'll be a place for fighting in the game, whether it's with enforcers or without, just because if not, the pressure cooker could explode without it.
I think that's an amazing explanation. For those who do not understand, what do you mean by that? Because that's always been the argument. If you take it out of the game, the alternative is actually worse. What is that pressure cooker you speak of? Why is it in there?
Yeah, and if you've been to hockey, if you've been to a hockey game, you can actually feel the emotion
Right.
of the game when you're sitting there, right? And you can tell the tension. It's a sport like no other, in my opinion. So when that tension, when guys are finishing their checks, high pace, there's a lot of passion, maybe a little bit of a rivalry in the game, and the game becomes, you know, intimidation's a part of life, right? Not just it's hockey; it's amplified on the ice. And when you start trying to intimidate each other, and there's no way to alleviate that pressure other with if hockey isn't there, if fighting isn't there, what's the alternative to send that message that you're not intimidated? It could be a hit that isn't as clean as it should be. It could be using your stick in a way that you should not be using it. I feel like when two guys get their gloves off, they're maybe one guy's tougher than the other, but at the end of the day, you're two guys that know what you're stepping into, and it alleviates the pressure of what the moment is. And you both know what you're signing up for in that moment. You both got your gloves off. You're about to engage, but it's not, there's no advantage to either person on being a cheap shot or not.
I know what you're saying, and I've always agreed with that. But who am I to say that I understand the code when I never played the game? But I kind of understand that code. What you're saying is better that a couple of guys blow off steam with their fists than the butt end of a stick or a blade. Like, it's more straight up. It's fundamentally, it's more sound. You know, I'm talking to you, Sean. I've always struck by this. This is really interesting to me. When I talk to enforcers, they're, and I don't want to paint everybody with a broad stroke, but there's some of the more thoughtful guys in the game I've ever spoken to. I'm struck by having this conversation with you right now. I can remember back in the day, Stu Grimson would come on. And you remember, Sean, like Stu Grimson wrote children's books. I can remember back in the day, Marty McSorley would come.
He's awesome. I love Stu.
Isn't Stewie great?
Yeah.
So Marty McSorley would come on back in the day when 99 came to LA and we did a lot. And we were the flagship for the Kings. And I was always struck by Marty. Like, Marty was really intimidating, but Marty was the player rep, and he would break down some of the most complex issues in the labor aspects of the game. And I'm like, Marty. Like, Marty's Marty, and Marty would do that. And is there something to that? Like, I was always struck by, quote, you know, the word goon. Certainly not a complimentary word, but in hockey parlance, you would get that. But some of the enforcers were some of the most thoughtful guys in the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I might be a little biased because I think I'm thoughtful as well. But, you know, maybe because we have to think through how we're going to make it, how every day is. I mean, skill guys, and this is nothing against them, but the super talented guys literally can just lace them up, go out and do what they have to do. I think for us, you know, leadership, the intangibles, we have to think through all of those things and think the game another level. I think a lot of the great coaches that play come from the third and fourth line, the guys that, you know, didn't rely on their skill and had to think their way through what those 60 minutes were like. I think there's something to be said for that.
All right. So from the very first moment I sat in my X chair, my body immediately went, ah, this is what a real office chair is supposed to feel like. I mean, like, I never actually looked forward to sitting in my office chair until I got my X chair. That's how amazing the X chair is. Can your current office chair give you a massage while you're working? Yeah, my X chair can. Can your current office chair heat up or cool down? My X chair can. It's all in the L Max massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X chair. High performance, quality engineering, extreme comfort. These are all the reasons I love my X chair, and now I can't wait to be at work. Sometimes, even if I'm not working, I just sit down and I kick it in my X chair, you know, to get that feeling. So take my advice. Try X chair for yourself, risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better your chair should be, you will never go back. Go to xchairrome.com right now. That's the letter X, chair, R-O-M-E.com. Or call 1-844-4XCHAIR and get $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. That's xchairrome.com, xchairrome.com. I want to ask you one more thing about an enforcer. I can remember when I started my TV career, I sat with Tiger Williams. Dude, He suited up. We were in studio. We did the interview. And I just looked at him, and I was a little bit brasher and younger, and I wasn't looking to start anything. But that was a dude. He terrified me just sitting across the table from him. Like, he had a pencil in his hand. I'm like, Tiger, dude, like, we're on the same page. I don't know what your intentions are with that pencil. I just did not want to mess with that guy at all. As you look back on your career, I'm sure there were guys that did not look forward to a day where they had to drop gloves with you. Who were a couple of guys that were really fierce, that you had some really tough battles with, that stayed with you? I'm sure every battle was tough, but a few of the guys that you really thought, man, this could be a long night.
Yeah, I mean, there was a few of them. You're right. I think for me, the biggest thing, because I'm, you know, in between 6'1", 6'2", once guys got up into the 6'7", 6'8" range, that's a lot of inches for me to give up. I got long arms for my height, but that's a lot of space in between us, and tough to climb the ladder and get into close quarters. So, you know, John Scott, Derek Bugard, God rest his soul. Those guys, I was never looking forward to lining up against and having to get them off. I mean, we did it because you have to, it's your job. George LaRocque was like the reigning king probably at one point when I was coming up into the NHL. We played against each other in the minors. I saw him beat up some pretty big guys in the minors. Did fairly well with Big George, but I'm trying to think. There's some guys like Eric Bolton. I think I fought 15 or 16 times. We're around the same size. So they're same size, sorry. So we had some good battles, and we go back to junior together. And there's a few guys out there that we had some pretty good rivalries with.
Michelle, was there like, you know, when you, and you know jiu-jitsu and you watch UFC, I'm sure there's like a fundamental, I mean, some of these guys don't like each other, but at the end of the day, it takes a very different breed to go into a cage and do what they do. There's a fundamental respect, I think, among fighters. Was there that on the ice like there are in other combat sports?
For me, 100%. I respected every single person that had the same role that I did, whether it was on a bigger enforcer role or less, like anyone that has to do that for a living, I definitely respect it. I don't think there was any situations where I had a true hatred for anyone I was competing against in that way. There might've been some guys when I was a little bit younger and immature that I might've reacted improperly and they might've too, but I chalked that up to being a little bit young and immature. But as I moved on, it was nothing but respect for anybody that had to do that job. And I've had beers with multiple guys after the fact, and I've fought close friends during the fact. So it's a job at the end of the day.
I'm definitely trying to move back to the other aspects before I let you go, and it's such an interesting book, but like fighting close friends, I get business is business and it's a job, but how hard was that?
For me it's, again, I could just put my mind in that space, and
right,
guys that I had played, it was usually guys I had played with before that really knew how I operated. And once those doors closed, and if you weren't on my side, you weren't family, and that's all that mattered to me, and I'd do anything to win. So there was never really any ill will afterwards. They kind of knew that if something happened and they're doing something inappropriate on the other side, and I was definitely going to address it, whether you're a friend or not. I mean, I had former teammates that were at my house the night before for dinner and delivered the mail, and the next day I grabbed them. So, and then hugged it out after the game and had a beer. So it's just, again, it's just our job.
Like you said, and you learn to compartmentalize. All right, so you mentioned the fourth line. For instance, you don't win a Stanley Cup unless you can roll four lines. You played on the famous Merlot line with the Boston Bruins when they won the Cup. Well, with the team, you had great success in Boston. You were beloved there. But what was life like on that line back in the day? What do you remember most about skating on that line?
I remember that we really didn't have to communicate. It was we always knew where each other were going to be on the ice after playing together for a while. And we knew each other's strengths and weaknesses and tried to, cover up the weaknesses and help each other out and accentuate the strengths. So I was very fortunate. Danny Pye, Greg Campbell were both, you know, second and third line players on their respective organizations before they came to the Bruins. We happened to be a very deep team, so they got stuck playing with me on the fourth line. And yeah, we had a lot of success for a fourth line. Those were some fun years. I mean, those are definitely the glory years.
Hey, let's take a moment and talk about WynnBET, the latest and greatest sports betting app on the market. The same five-star hotel service that you know and love is now in the digital betting space, providing an elite sports book and digital casino app. Whether you're playing money lines for NFL Week 11, totals for College Football Week 12, or both, WynnBET has you covered. Are you looking for other sports? WynnBET has that too. It is all right there with your WinBet app. WinBet is also fully integrated with Win Rewards, which means by playing WinBet, you can accrue points to earn free credit in app and comp dollars towards perks at Win Resorts. Discounted hotel stays, priority dining and entertainment, free merch. It really is the very best loyalty program in the industry. Call it a win-win. Whether playing from your phone or your computer, you absolutely have got to sign up for WinBet ASAP. Bet with the very best. Get into the game. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. You do have to be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. You know, Sean, I've said this before, and fans of the stick and ball sports don't really get this or agree with it or appreciate it, but I would argue that getting your name on the Stanley Cup or winning it all in the NHL is the toughest thing to do in sports, because once the postseason starts, like literally not even every series or even every game, but every shift is a war of attrition. And plus, you've got so many players that came up and they started maybe on small farms and small towns. It just, if it's not the hardest thing, and I think it might be, it certainly seems to mean more to the guys who play that sport than others in other sports. And maybe I'm off base when I say that, but you can speak to this. You have two Stanley Cups. What did it mean to you, especially the journey you traveled to get your name on the Stanley Cup, especially the first time with the Ducks, even if you didn't play as much as you did in Boston, just to get your name on the cup? What did that represent?
Yeah, and I'll agree with you on the, I'm a little biased, obviously, but I do think it's the hardest trophy in sports, and purely for the fact of the physicality that's in the playoffs and the frequency of play. I mean, you know, you play every other night for 2.5 months straight, and you're the body. I don't think there's another sport that's like that. I mean, football, they play every week going into it, and it's a very violent sport. Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking anything away from them, but the fact that we're playing at that level every other night and what guys play through by the time they get to the finals is actually remarkable in some situations. And you leave it all out there for, like you just said, that you dream your whole life, especially as a, you know, I'm Canadian. We grew up playing street hockey and ice hockey. Every time we were playing for something on the street, it was pretending to win the Stanley Cup. Like, it's all you dream about. And then for that time in Anaheim, listen, it's all the sacrifices, all the work you've put in. It's an accumulation of every little detail coming to fruition in one instant when you get that trophy and get to put it over your head for a quick, I think I had 10, 15 seconds. I was a small spoke on the wheel there, so I did not want to take too much time with it. But everything you've ever been through, all the hard work, it's finally worth it in that very moment. And people ask me all the time on how I compare the two, and you sort of brought it up. But like, Anaheim was the most exciting moment of my life, 100%. The Bruins one probably meant more to me because I was a bigger part of the team, played more meaningful minutes, had been in the organization for 4 or 5 years, had helped, I think, with the culture inside the room, along with a lot of the other leaders. So that one meant a lot more, but the Anaheim one was the most exciting.
I think that's awesome. You know, I'm still in the area, so not long ago I went to Tamu Solani's restaurant, and you know, Tamu, when you talk about
place
guys,
is great, isn't it?
Oh my God,
love,
yeah,
that place.
So fun. And in Tamu, like when you talk, Sean, about guys with skill, right? I mean, Tamu was just a super freak and super personality, super charisma. You know, and I try not to play favorites. One of my favorites, and I had a chance to talk to him when he was in the Hall of Fame, because he was very hard to run down. He used to be accessible when he played, but I had such an unbelievable fascination with Paul Kariya. What a unique individual and player, right?
Yeah, and I missed him. I didn't know him too well. I know him from a few stories from Tamu. And Tamu was one of the greatest human beings I've ever played
right.
with. We were over in Finland for a international game like two, three years ago with the Panthers, and Tamu was at the restaurant afterwards, run into him. And he's going around telling every single person that works in the NHL offices that he wouldn't have won a cup without me. I'm like, Tamu, like, that is definitely not the case, bud. Like, it
that
was all
awesome.
You.
Awesome.
Just the type of human being he is, right? So, yeah, Paul Kariya, I mean, not a huge guy. Like, just figured out a way. He's super skilled, hardworking, fearless, put the puck in the net. And I don't know him all that well, so it's tough for me to talk about him, but I was definitely a fan of watching him compete.
I like that a lot, just in and of itself. And I love Tamu running around saying, I would never even have a cup if not for this guy. And by the way, you know, he believes it, and it's probably true.
Not definitely not true, but I appreciate Tamo pumping my tires.
I think that that's actually awesome. Awesome. So let me ask you, if you look back on your career, 20 years professionally, 14 years in the NHL, what are you most proud of?
Probably when I was in Boston. Well, I guess before that too, having a platform, being able to give back, being able to start a foundation, being able to raise millions of dollars and give it back to good causes. That's definitely what I'm most proud of, to be completely honest. The game's one thing. It gave me a lot of opportunity, like I said, but to be able to give back and put some smiles in some people's faces, that just where I'm from and what my upbringing was like, that probably means the most to me.
To be honest with you, I knew that was the answer, and that's why I posed the question like that. You formed your foundation, you founded your foundation, the Sean Thornton Foundation, in 2013. So let me ask you then before you go, what types of causes does the foundation focus on? Why is that so important to you personally?
It's always been important to me. I think there's a story in the book that kind of explains it better, but I was doing a hospital visit way back when I played in St. John's, Newfoundland, and was going through the hospital, and one of my friend's sisters was in there, and I had no idea she was even sick. And I didn't really even notice it until I started writing the book. Like, that's probably where it all started from. So I was a big believer in, you know, always being in the community, giving back, doing as many things as humanly possible. How the foundation was formed was, my grandmother had Parkinson's, was very sick. We started a golf tournament. The Bruins ran the golf tournament for me because I didn't have a 501c3. The lockout happened in 2012. Was no longer allowed to communicate with the front office. Did not want to lose the golf tournament. Did not know if we were going to get, you know, locked out for the year. So I talked to a couple of my friends that are now on the board, Tom Tinlin, a few others, and said, hey, will you help me start a foundation? And they said 100%. So the foundation supports, we're 50% pediatric cancer and 50% Parkinson's, because my grandmother was affected by Parkinson's. And I just honestly did so many hospital visits. It's impossible not to be affected in a positive way by going to those hospitals and seeing what those kids go through, and just their personalities and their optimism in what they're going through. It really puts things in perspective for us.
I was going to say, Sean, as a quick follow, like you are used to being in a room of alphas. You played a fierce sport, a violent sport. What's it like to see these kids dealing with this and the sort of heart and courage and desire and optimism they show? Is there any way to explain that?
Not really. I mean, other than, I have kids now. It affected me in a large way as a player walking in there, and, you know, they're going through all these things, and I'm putting a small smile on their face, maybe if they're a Bruins fan, but they're putting a huge smile on my face just seeing how they approach the day. And as a parent, like, I can't imagine what it would be like to see my kids going through that. And it's really heartbreaking, but heartwarming at the same time, and made me, you know, really appreciate some of the smaller shit that we deal with and, you know, complain about. Like, what are we complaining about at the end of the day? Like, it really puts things into perspective, and those kids are more resilient, tougher than any of us probably would ever be.
100%. And I was finally going to say, do you feel like when you would go in there and then come out of there, do you feel like you got as much out of it as they did, or maybe even more on some level?
Probably more. And I, you know, that's not why you do it, but you come out of there, you definitely probably get more.
You bet.
So I like to think that they got more out of it, but it was probably more for myself.
No, of course. So you did it. You wrote the book. You finally got it out there. Is the book a book where they can find wherever you get books? Where can they find the book?
Yeah, Amazon. It seems to be the big driver right now. Listen, we started writing this, I thought it was going to be up to Boston, hot stoves with all my friends, pulling stories out of that, seeing the personalities and the get-togethers, and the pandemic hit. So a lot of Zooms, a lot of over the phone. But, you know, with what we're dealing with, I'm really happy with what came out. And if it affects one person in a positive manner, I'm happy we did it.
It's called Finding My Way to the Top. Sean Thornton, I love it, actually. I love the sport. I love the story. What a great conversation you and I had. It's always good to talk hockey. I really appreciate it. Sean, congrats on that. Great to have you on, and let's be sure we do it again.
Love to. Thanks for having me. Big fan. And, you know, congrats on all your success too, Jim.
As I said, my man is no goon. He let us in on the cerebral side of brawling on the ice for a living. He may not have loved that aspect of the job, but he accepted it and pretty much perfected it. So I really appreciate that visit. Thanks to Sean Thornton for showing up on the Side Hustle with his trademark passion and thoughtfulness. If you enjoyed that conversation and you want to hear more like it, I've got plenty more where that came from. Good news. In fact, there are already 197 other episodes in the can, and they are always available for you for free. Got a brand new episode coming up next week, Ep 199. So take a second, make sure you hit subscribe. This way you will be notified of every new episode as soon as it goes live. And while you do that, let me hit you with some of your voicemails.
First new message.
Dan Smack, Mark in Parts Unknown. Appreciate the kind words you shouted out to me. Chim Chim, I'm on the phone. The kind words you gave me this week. I'm working on some stuff. Gonna make my jungle debut call here soon. Get my courage up. Chim Chim. No. Chim Chim. Chim Chim, I'm on the phone. Ah!
Message deleted. Next message.
Sup, Romy? Shout out to the Chargers. How'd that ass kicking taste? You just got punked by Cousins. Hashtag Joey Bosa. Hashtag Derwin James. Hashtag Herbert. All taking the fat L. Enjoy that new stadium. Y'all ain't ready. Y'all ain't never been on our level. Skull Vikings, take that big fat L. Show me your lightning bolt. Over and out.
Message saved. Next message.
What's up, Vance Mack? It's Brady. So the vegan donut place here closed recently, and that should be a good thing, right? Because I no longer have that temptation. But man, I tell you, sometimes when I go past there and see the closed store, it does not feel like a good thing. But hey, let's remember what Jaho told us, and we will get through this. See ya.
Message saved. You have no more messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.